We are walking through a series on Abraham called Everyday Faith. Today is probably one of the saddest stories in the whole life of Abraham. And really, it's not so much focused on him, but his nephew Lot. When you think about Lot, Lot has been traveling with Abraham now for several years. He has seen God do so many things in Abraham's life. He's heard Abraham tell the stories of faith. He's had those times of worship when Abraham built those incredible altars to the Lord. He's learned from Abraham's mistakes. Abraham has bottomed out spiritually several times and just had incredible disasters. And Lot was there, and he learned from those. But here we are at a point in Lot's life where he's made a lot of poor choices and bad decisions, and you're going to see him today in our study lose everything he's got. He's a tremendously wealthy man. He's got influence. He's got position. He's got a great family, and he's going to walk away with the clothes on his back. That's it. He loses his career. He loses his wealth, all his belongings. His wife dies. And at the very end of this chapter, he's hiding in a cave with his two daughters in a perverted relationship with them. And he's just an absolute spiritual failure. Oh, and it's really depressing to watch this and to just read of step by step how he goes from everything to nothing. And the scary part of all this is where Lot ends up is the exact place where every believer in our auditorium this morning has been at one point or another in their life. And what's even scarier is the fact that there are a lot of believers that are there right this very minute. It's a state of living. They're saved. They've given their lives to Christ. But everything in their life is out of focus. They've lost sight of their purpose and their calling as a believer. And if something doesn't happen to the believers today who are living in this condition, we'll end up in the exact same place that Lot did, an absolute spiritual failure. All right, we're going to do our best to cover the entire chapter 19 today. And so it's a familiar story, and we're just going to just walk through it very rapidly and then come back. And then we're going to talk about the things in Lot's life that really determine how he ended up in such a position as this, as such a spiritual failure. So let's begin in verse 1. Chapter 19 says, "And two angels arrived in Sodom in the evening." Now, from last week, chapter 18, remember, Jesus and two angels arrived at Abraham's tent in Hebron there and talked about the very sins and the situation that was going on in the cities that are in the plain, Sodom in particular. And so these are the angels that left Abraham, and now they're showing up in Sodom. Lot was sitting in the gateway of the city, and when he saw them, he got up to meet them and bowed down with his face to the ground. Now, the gateway to the city may seem why is that landmark mentioned? But it's very unique because that's where business transactions were made. That's where when you made a business deal of any type, it was finalized, it was legalized in the gateway of the city. And that's also where judges met to hold court. And so later on, it refers to Lot as one of the judges. And so here he is. He's kind of risen to power in this city of Sodom. And so he's there in the gateway as a judge and holding court, listening to the cases of the people. Verse 2, "My lords," he said, referring to the two angels, "please turn aside to your servant's house. You can wash your feet and spend the night, and then go on your way early in the morning." "No," they answered, "we will spend the night in the square." But he insisted so strongly that they did go with him and entered his house. He prepared a meal for them, baking bread without yeast, and they ate. Remember, this is that same Middle Eastern culture that we talked about last week. And what was the main thing that everybody focused on. It was an honor to show hospitality to strangers. And we focused last week, we said there are three huge parts to that. Number one, you give them water to wash their feet, to refresh them, cool them off. You provide shade or places of rest for them, and then you prepare a meal. You prepare the best that you've got for them. And we find that in verse 2 and 3. Verse 2 says you can wash your feet, you can spend the night. Verse 3 said he prepared a meal for them. He baked bread without yeast and they ate. He's going through all of the right steps to show that hospitality. What an honor it was to entertain strangers. And at this point, he had no clue who these were. No clue that these were angels that had just been with Abraham and the Lord Jesus Christ. Verse 4, before they had gone to bed, all the men from every part of the city of Sodom, both young and old, surrounded the house. And they called to Lot, "Where are the men who came to you tonight? Bring them out to us so that we can have sex with them." Two things here. Number one, it says that all the men. And Sodom was a large town, so we're talking about hundreds, probably thousands of men there. And homosexual sex was a capital offense, punishable by death. But yet it was so common, and it was so infiltrated into the DNA of the whole city that it was not even noticed. It was not even dealt with. Verse 6, Lot went outside to meet with them. He's trying to reason with all these men and shut the door behind him and said, "No, my friends, don't do this wicked thing." And then in verse 8, he says the most unbelievable statement that I believe a dad could make. "Look, I have two daughters who've never slept with a man. Let me bring them out to you and you can do whatever you like with them, but don't do anything to these men, for they've come under my roof and the protection of my roof." All right. Wow. Can you imagine offering your daughters to an angry mob? You can do whatever you want to with them. Leave the men alone. Absolutely unbelievable statement. But the men, listen to how they replied in verse 9. "Get out of our way," they replied. And they said, "This fellow came here as an alien and now he wants to play the judge," referring to his role, his job there in the gateway. "We'll treat you worse than them." They kept bringing pressure on Lot and moved forward to break down the door. But the men inside, the two angels, reached out and pulled Lot back into the house and shut the door. And then they struck the men who were at the door of the house, young and old, with blindness, so they couldn't find the door. What a drama, what a story that's unfolding. The mob is getting violent. The angels pull Lot back in and strike everybody with blindness. Now they don't know where they are and they can't find their way into Lot's house. I don't know how they found their way back home. Verse 12, the two men said to Lot, "Do you have anyone else here, sons-in-law, sons or daughters, or anyone else in the city who belongs to you? Get them out of here because we're going to destroy this place." The outcry to the Lord against its people is so great that he has sent us to destroy it. I think at that point, the blinders come off of Lot's eyes and he realizes, he understands who these two men really are. The reference to Jehovah God and the reference that God has sent them here, I think he's connected the dots and these are angels. Look in verse 14. So Lot went out and spoke to his sons-in-law who were pledged to marry his daughters. They weren't married yet. We think of sons-in-law after the marriage ceremony, but in this period of time, people were, they went through a year long, they were betrothed to the girl, and in technically they were married. They didn't live together or sleep together, but legally they were referred to as husband and wife and sons-in-law, but they had not gone through the ceremony yet. And it says, verse 14, he said, "Hurry and get out of this place because the Lord is about to destroy the city." But his sons-in-law thought he was joking. Now, had they been some of the ones that were at the door? Well, it said all the men of the city, so I'm assuming that they were included in that. Verse 15, with the coming of dawn, the angels urged Lot, saying, hurry. Can you imagine having angels in your house sent directly from the throne room of God, and they look you eye to eye and tell you to hurry, that it's imperative that you get out of here. Hurry, take your wife, your two daughters who are here, and you will be swept away when the city is punished. But when he hesitated, we're going to come back on this word in just a little bit. This is huge. He hesitated. He didn't hurry. He didn't leave. Man, he didn't know whether he wanted to leave or stay. He hesitated. He had to think about it. When he hesitated, the men, the angels, grabbed his hand and the hands of his wife and of his two daughters and led them safely out of the city, for the Lord was merciful to them. Can you imagine that? They were having to be forced out. The wicked city of Sodom, and they had to be forced out. Destruction is on the way. We've been sent here to destroy this place, but yet, even with that warning, they weren't sure they wanted to leave. The draw, the tie, the connection to Sodom and those people were so strong that it was almost a debate going on in their mind. They weren't really sure what to do. Verse 17, as soon as they had brought them out, one of them said, and all these verbs are written emphatically in the Hebrew language here. So just put a lot of passion into these verbs when you're reading it. Flee for your lives. Don't look back and don't stop anywhere in the plain. Flee to the mountains or you will be swept away. They are as passionate and intense as they can be, and I think they've got radar lock on their eyes so that they can understand we really are serious and mean business. Lot at this time begins a conversation and kind of negotiates, is there somewhere else we can go? We can't make it all the way to where you're wanting us to go. How about this place over here? The angels agreed, and then pick back up in verse 24. Then the Lord rained down. NIV says burning sulfur. Other translations will say fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah from the Lord out of the heavens. Thus he overthrew the cities and the entire plain, including all those living in the cities, all the vegetation of the land. You go into Revelation and you hear about hell. And in the NIV, even in Revelation, it uses the terms burning sulfur, where the King James and some other translations will say fire and brimstone. This is a precursor. This is an example of what hell, a small, tiny example of what the punishment of hell is going to be like. When the judgment of God falls, it is devastating. And this is what happened to these cities. This is what happened to everybody and everything. All the wildlife, the plants, the crops, everything was consumed in this monstrous display of fire. And so early the next morning, look in verse 27. Here's where Abraham comes back into the story. Remember last week, Abraham and the Lord Jesus were on top of the mountain looking down into the plain, and they could see Sodom down there in the plain. Well, look at verse 27. Early in the next morning, Abram got up and returned to the place where he had stood before the Lord, looking down into the plain. And he looked down toward Sodom and Gomorrah, toward all the land of the plains, and he saw dense smoke rising from the land like smoke from a furnace. So when God destroyed the cities of the plain, he remembered Abraham and he brought Lot out of the catastrophe that overthrew the cities where Lot had lived. Okay, Lot made it out of Sodom. But then the story just gets sadder and sadder. And this is absolutely pathetic. And so verse 30 to the end of the chapter, Lot runs to a cave, begins to hide in that cave with his two daughters. it turns into an ancestral relationship. One of the daughters gives birth to a son who is the leader and the head of a tribe called the Moabites. The other daughter gave birth to a son who was a leader and the head of a people group named the Ammonites. And if you'll follow those two tribes all the way through the Old Testament, you'll find out that every single day they were hated enemies of the children of Israel. Think back over the last two or three weeks. Hagar had a son who was the head, the family head of the people that are going to be the Islamic people. And now you've got the Ammonites and the Moabites. You are gathering the mortal enemies of the children of Israel now, and they're being surrounded. But what a terrible picture and story this is of Lot and his family. As he was running, verse 26, let me go back to 26. But Lot's wife looked back as they were running from the disaster, and she became a pillar of salt. She was killed there in the plains. And so how devastating is this story? Well, I want you to know, we can follow the same path that Lot did. We can be, as believers, the exact same type of spiritual failures that Lot was. Now, does this mean that God's going to destroy our homes with fire and brimstone, with burning sulfur? Well, probably not. So the judgment might not be the same, but the end result will be. It will be that we will disobey, we'll disappoint God, and that we will be judged by the Lord for the life that we live. How did Lot get to this point in his life? He had everything going for him. What a wealthy man he and Abraham were. They separated because of the amount of their wealth. His flocks were so large. He had so many servants. And his belongings were just monstrous. And I think that's why he was accepted in Sodom. 2 Timothy chapter 2 describes Lot as a righteous man. He didn't participate in the lifestyle of these men in the city of Sodom. Well, how did they allow him to stay? Why didn't they attack him like they were trying to attack the angels? Well, we're not told, but probably his wealth and power and influence protected him. Maybe it was the number of servants that he had. Maybe they formed a protective bodyguard around his house and family. We're really not told, and we don't know. But here's the thing I want to draw a picture today, and I want to transition from Lot to us, because we're both believers and we can both go through the same set of circumstances and trials, and we can both end up as spiritual failures, just like Lot did. So I want you to think for me for just a minute. Lot was no different than we are. He moved to Sodom because it was a very appealing place. It was an attractive place. Sodom is described in the Bible as a very prosperous city. You think of it as dirty and nasty because of the lifestyle of the men and how horribly wicked it was. But visually, it was very appealing, very prosperous. Ezekiel describes Sodom as being a place where the food is plentiful and describes it as very good. It describes the lifestyle as carefree and in just a lifestyle of ease. They've got everything they want. It is so appealing. And he moved there for the same reasons that you and I relocate. He moved there so that he could provide for his family. He was a good father, good family man. He wanted to provide for his family. He wanted to achieve. He wanted bigger and better, newer and nicer. He wanted to be promoted. He wanted to achieve in life. And he wanted a lifestyle where he could enjoy what he has. That is no different than you or I. So what was the difference? He didn't look any different than any of the people there. He was accepted by the people. He blended in. He fit in. Matter of fact, we already talked about that he had ascended to a position of leadership there. What was it? What was it? Well, let's look. I'm going to give you three thoughts here today. And so I'm going to give you some blanks to fill in. Number one, Lot never made a spiritual difference in anybody's life. He never made a spiritual difference the whole time that he lived there. I don't even know if anybody knew that he was a believer. We're not told that. Peter describes him as a righteous man, but that's 2,000 years after Lot had lived. So what do we know about Lot? Well, we know that his life was characterized by compromise. You know, a few weeks ago, we watched Abraham bottom out and fail miserably down in Egypt because he compromised. We watched just a couple of weeks ago when Abraham and Lot separated. Lot compromised and chose the places of the plain, not because that God told him to. He never asked God, but because they looked good. He figured out in his own mind. He made his own decisions without hearing from God. And what a compromise that is. And so he's here. Yeah, let me refresh your memory. In chapter 13, verse 10, it first talks that when they were about to separate, Abraham and Lot, Lot looked at Sodom. And he liked what he saw. Two verses later in chapter 13, verse 12, it says that he chose the places in the plain and he lived near Sodom. Not in it. He didn't want to identify with it. Didn't want anything to do with those wicked people, remember? One chapter later in chapter 14, verse 12, it says that Lot now lived in the city of Sodom. And now here we are in chapter 19, verse 1. He's not only living in Sodom, he's accepted, he's fit in, and he's a leader. What a life of compromise for someone who identified themselves as a believer, someone who had that everyday faith, and he made some poor choices and bad decisions, and it ended up costing him everything. If you don't remember anything else that we talk about today, let me give you a powerful statement, and I hope you'll write this down. The decisions and the choices that you make today, listen to me now, whether you're an 8-year-old little boy, you're a girl, you're a student, you're a young married, you're a senior adult, the choices and decisions that you make today will turn into your lifestyle tomorrow. I want you to remember, Lot, when he went there, was to provide for his family and to achieve. He didn't go there to be a missionary. As a matter of fact, his purpose was entirely different. His goals were entirely different. And it's so much like ours. He went there just to be a good person and to achieve. And I want you to know that the majority of believers today, here in our worship center and where you are watching us, the majority of believers today have those exact same goals. I just want to be good. I want to be a good parent or a good student or a good child, a good employee. I just want to be a good teacher, a good engineer, a good coach. I just want to be good at what I do. I want to achieve. I want to get promoted. I want to get raises. I want bigger and better, newer and nicer. And I just want to enjoy my life. Somewhere along the line, as believers, we feel like that we have checked the little box that says believer, non-believer, believer. And we gave our life to Christ and we checked that box. And after that, we feel like that the rest of our life is up to us. You know, we fit in, we enjoy, we promote, and we just do the best we can. We try to be good people, and we're no different than Lot. We're headed down the same road that Lot was. Let me ask you this. This is one of the things that really bit Lot. But I want you to look in the mirror this morning and answer this in your own life. Regardless of your age, regardless of how long you've been a believer, whose life or lives are you making a spiritual difference in today? Are you any different than Lot? Are you consumed with self? Are you consumed with your life? Maybe your life is middle school. Maybe your life is NASA. Maybe your life is a school teacher, administrator, coach, maybe whatever. Are you so consumed with your life that you've lost track of God's purpose for your life. He saved you and He saved me for us to invest our lives in other people. Other people coming to know Him as their Savior and their Lord. Other people learning and growing what it means to be a believer. Other people committing different areas of their walk with the Lord to Him, growing in their Christian life. Whose life or whose lives are you investing in? That's radically different. Now, that's radically different than just being a good person, employee, coach, or whatever. That's radically different than being successful, than having a lot of possessions and stuff. That's radically different than just enjoying the life that you're living. Being a spiritual influence is seeing lives changed spiritually. And I come back to this one more time. Whose life or whose lives are you making a spiritual difference in? You know what? If the answer to that question is, well, I'm helping, you know, I'm the room mom at school for my son or my daughter. Well, I'm involved in this and I do this. But if those things aren't changing lives, then you've got to be honest and say, you know what? I'm not making a spiritual difference in anybody's life. And I hope when you get honest with yourself and honest with God, I hope that will embarrass us. I hope that will shame us to think that there I cried out to the Lord to save me. Why? Because of my sins. I cried out to the Lord and said, I want to be just like you. I want you to be my Messiah. I want to be Jesus with skin on. Yet here I am. I'm living a good life, but I'm not making a difference, a spiritual difference in anybody's life. What's it going to take to change? Well, what's got to happen today? Is it, it's more than just thinking, well, you know what, Steve, I think you're right. Some way you've got to draw that line in the sand and you've got to ask God, God, would you make me so sick of my life? Would you make me so sick of the way that I'm living? God, would you get my focus and my priorities and my purpose back on what you've called me to be as a believer? Well, Lot, there, and the verse that we used to back up all of this was that first verse where he blended in, where he was sitting there in the gateway of that city as a judge. He lost focus. And it's so easy for you and so easy for me to do that in our lives. That may be where you are this morning. If it is, I hope God will make you sick enough of where we are that you'll cry out to Him. Let me show you a second characteristic of Lot. Remember that statement that we made, the comment about how incredibly horrible it was that he would offer his daughters to that angry mob? Well, this is the reason that he did that. Here's our second thought. Lot had become numb to sin. He had lived in it so long that sin didn't bother him anymore. He was in a city that was characterized by wickedness. And when you read through the word that's used to describe this picture is a carnal believer. Carnal meaning fleshly. Carnal meaning self-centered. I'm more interested in me and mine. It's what I want. It's what I enjoy. It's what I desire. And I've lost sight of the purpose that God saved me. He's no longer a priority for me. Now, don't mistake. I may still be in church every Sunday, but that doesn't mean He's a priority in my life. I'm not having a time alone with God. Faith comes by how? Hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. And when I neglect that time alone with God, that personal enrichment every day, it won't be long before I will be the picture of a carnal believer, that I will be on the road to a spiritual failure, that I will look just like Lot. Oh, it is so incredible. But sin, he was so used to everybody in this city was involved in sin. It didn't bother him anymore. It didn't bother him to hear about it. It didn't bother him to know what everybody was involved in. As a matter of fact, because these people had become his friends and his neighbors and his business associates, have you ever noticed that sin doesn't seem like sin anymore when your friends are doing it? Because you don't want to label them or condemn them. So it must, you just kind of accept it as, well, you know what, it's okay. It's what they're choosing, and it doesn't bother me anymore. Unbelievable. You get so accustomed to it that you're not even aware of it anymore. Oh, I remember years ago when we were in Memphis in seminary, we were moved there and got an apartment, and we lived there for a year and couldn't wait to find a little rental house that we could move into. We found one, went and looked at it. Didn't take us long to look at it. Boy, we wanted that. We moved in, and after we moved in, we realized that we were right next to the runway of the Memphis International Airport. And I can remember those first few days, every time one of those big jets took off and that house shook. And we thought, oh, why are we here? This is deafening. We were so crazy to do this. But you know what was true about that little house after 2 or 3 weeks? We never heard the planes anymore. They were still taking off all day and all night. And they were still shaking the house. But all of a sudden, we had grown so accustomed to it that we didn't even notice it. It didn't even bother us. And when somebody mentioned it, we would say, "What planes?" You can get so accustomed to something that you get numb to it. And that's what Lot grew to become in the city of Sodom. He was numb to the sin that was there. Now, what a hypocrite he was. See, we don't like to use that word. We look at that word as very offensive. If someone called you or called me a hypocrite, boy, we would probably bow up on that, and we don't like that at all. But when you think about it, here he was known as a righteous man, but yet here he was in verse 8, offering his daughters to the mob, telling them that they could do whatever they wanted to do with his daughters, just to leave him and these other two men alone. Those two things are so incredibly hypocritical. You can't be a righteous man and think and live and talk like this. They just don't match. But you know what happens when you become numb to sin? You kind of adopt a different lifestyles depending on who you're around and where you are. See, when I'm around this set of friends, you know what? My language might get a little bit coarse. You know, I might use gestures or language that doesn't honor the Lord, but it's to fit in with this crowd. But then when I'm over here, you know, I might act completely different. But then when I come to church, I'm a completely different person, and that's called being a hypocrite. A hypocrite is a word that means the person that we see on the outside is not the real person that's on the inside. The person that's on the outside can change with regard to the people I'm around or the places that I go, but the person on the inside is radically different. Wow. Isn't it easy to get numb to sin? Have you gotten numb to sin in your own life? Does sin still just draw you up and just make you sick that you sinned against a holy God? Does when you think about the sin that's in your life and you think about the fact that Jesus went to the cross, He shed His blood and suffered and died on that cross for the sins in my life and the sins in your life. But yet, you know what? When you get numb to sin, you don't even think about that anymore. Unbelievable. Does sin break your heart? Or have you gotten so accustomed to it that it just seems natural? You're so accustomed to it that you don't even notice it. You're not even aware of it any longer. I didn't know that my language was offensive. I didn't know that those thoughts were wrong. I didn't know that this habit or this lifestyle was not pleasing to God. I want you to know, until God makes you sick of your sin, you'll grow numb to it. For you and I as a believer this morning, if we're going to get off of that road to spiritual failure that Lot was on, you and I need to pray right now, God, make me sick of my sin. God, let me see my sin the way you see my sin. You hate my sin. Sin just detests you. And Father, I want to have that same attitude toward the sin in my life. Well, let's look at a third thing, and this was the third characteristic of Lot, who was on his road to spiritual failure. Lot wanted God and the world. And in verse 16, do you remember? The angels had said, you've got to get out of here, you've got to hurry. And it said, and Lot, what? Hesitated. Oh, I know I need to leave, but I like it here. I know I need to leave, but these are my friends. This is my business. This is all my stuff. I've worked hard to achieve this. This is bigger and better and newer and nicer, and I don't know that I want to go. And isn't it amazing that when you're close to failure, you want the best of both worlds? You think somehow that you can honor God and that you can live for self. You think that you can please God, but at the same time, you think that you can live in an environment, you can be attracted to an environment that is so anti-God. Sodom was the perfect portrait of life without God. You know what? It was full of wickedness, but it was attractive. It was appealing. It drew you in. It made you want to be a part of it. And Lot and his family, oh, they wanted to go with the angels. They didn't want to be destroyed, but, oh, I like it here. And folks, I want you to know, as a believer, when you are so drawn in, when you are on your last step towards spiritual failure, you won't feel that urgency to change. You won't feel that desire, that drive, that passion for God to take you away and change your life. It's almost, I like the way I'm living. I like what I'm doing. I like what I've got. And I'm not sure. I want the best of both worlds. Here's what Lot didn't understand, and here's what so many believers today don't understand. You and I have a choice to make. You can live for God, and you can have all the blessings that He offers us as His children. Or you can live for the world. You can live for self, for pleasure, for stuff, for achievement, for bigger and better and newer and nicer. You can live for one or you can live for the other, but you can't live for both. And you and I have got a choice to make today. Where are you going to focus your life? What are you going to choose? Well, how does God change me? He changes you when you go back to that original surrender that you made of your life to Him. God, I remember when I gave you my life, but I've drifted so far away. Maybe I'm still involved in church. Maybe I'm really a nice guy. Maybe I'm not joining in and participating in the lifestyle. But God, my heart has drifted away. I'm not as passionate. I'm not as focused. I'm not making a spiritual difference in anybody's life. And sin is, I've gotten insensitive to it. I'm not even aware of it. God, I need you to change me. God, I need to recommit my life. I need you to refocus my priorities and my passion. God, I need to radar lock back on you and you alone. God, I want to live for you. And there are believers in our worship service at Flint River this morning. There are believers that are watching online today that have slipped into that same spiritual place that Lot was. You've drifted away. You're on your road to spiritual failure. Maybe some of you are at the very last step. And I want you to know the urgency that those angels talked a lot about. And he told them to hurry. You got to do this now. I want you to know if those angels were at your house and they were face to face with you, they would talk to you with that same sense of urgency. This isn't something that you can just put off. This isn't something that you can just brush off as not important. You need to get your heart and life right with God. You need to be everything that God wants you to be. It's not a choice of both and. It's God or the world, and it's your choice, and it's my choice. So today, here's where we are. I'm asking you as a believer, let me talk to the believers, because this has been really a whole message for believers this morning. As a believer, are you everything that God has called you to be? Are you everything that He created you to be? Are you invested and you're busy making a spiritual difference in the lives of other people? You're broken to sin. You're sensitive to sin. When we know that we disappoint and we disobey, you go to God and, God, I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that. I shouldn't have acted that way. I shouldn't have thought that. I shouldn't have gone there. I shouldn't have. And you're very sensitive to sin. And I'm not living for self in the world. God, I am living for self in the world. And God, I need you to change me. Oh, Father, I pray for believers today, Lord, that are on the same road that Lot's on. God, would you break the hearts and lives of every believer that's identifying with Lot this morning. Father, I pray for these people, God, whether they're men or women or students or children. Father, I pray that you're speaking into their hearts right now. God, I pray that you're calling them back to a recommitment, to a life, Father, of a total surrender to you. God, take them back to that place where they were when they gave their life to you, when that relationship with you was so fresh and so new and so passionate and so intense. God, we want to honor you with every part of our life. That's our prayer, and that's our petition to you today in Jesus' name. Well, what about the people that are watching? What about the people that are here in our worship center Sunday morning, who've never made that commitment of their life to Christ? You were talking to believers today, Pastor. I've never surrendered my life to Christ. Maybe I've been involved in church, maybe not. Maybe I've come a time or two, or for the last 20 years, maybe not. Oh, how do I get to be a believer? It's very simple. You surrender your heart and your life. You say, Jesus, I want to give you my life today. God, I realize that I'm separated from you because of my sins and the penalty for that. If I were to die right now, my penalty, the justice of God, like we talked about last week, is the fact that I would be punished forever in hell because I never gave you my life. God, I need you, and I want to ask you to come and forgive my sins. I want to ask you to live inside of me. I want to ask you to be my Messiah and to change my life. God, I want to live for you. I want to love you for the rest of my life. And if you've never made that surrender of your life today, I want you to know that's the greatest, that's the most important decision you could ever make. And I pray that you will do that right now, wherever you are.